The minute I heard my first love story, I started looking for you, not knowing how blind that was. Lovers don't finally meet somewhere. They're in each other all along. I remember the first time, sometime during my early 20s, that I read this love poem written by Rumi, a 13th century Sufi poet. I believed then that he was speaking about romantic love, and I shared his writing as a way to proclaim my love, my 20-year-old love. It was much later that I realized that Rumi was not speaking of romantic love at all, but of an ecstatic sort of love for God. Rumi's religious practice was that of a whirling dervish, and he danced as a way to move closer to his beloved Allah. His poetry proclaimed his deep love and desire for communion with God. I have watched the dance of the dervishes, and I've wondered, all these years later, if as a Unitarian Universalist, I can truly relate with this concept of being so in love with God. Would we whirl, like the dervishes, to experience a state of enlightenment? Would we sit under the Bodhi tree for months with minimal food and water, in constant meditation, endeavoring to leave the ego behind and to be truly open, emanating pure essence, harming none, not even an ant? Buddhist monks believe that we are all one, and so they garden with their hands and not with tools, because they do not want to harm any being, including what we might see as being the lowliest of the low, because that could be an incarnation of someone. I wonder if we would be willing not to speak, to remain in silence, to find that place of deep abiding connection with that small, still voice within. What would we be willing to do to feel a deep sense of connection with everything? 2 weeks ago in my sermon, I shared with you that I believe that we are all one. Our seventh UU principle reminds us of this fact, stating that we are all a part of the interdependent web of all existence. What does that mean? Our seventh principle reminds me of the Hindu story of Indra's net, an ancient story thought to have first been told sometime in 1000 BCE, over 3,000 years ago. It is described that the net of the Vedic god Indra, whose net hangs over his palace on Mount Meru, the axis mundi of Vedic cosmology and Vedic mythology, Indra's net has a multifaceted jewel at each vertex, and each jewel is reflected in all of the other jewels. In this ancient teaching, also known as a sutra, the image of Indra's net is used to describe the interconnectedness of the universe. Let's step into Indra's sutra, translated from Sanskrit. Far away, in the heavenly abode of the great god Indra, there is a wonderful net which has been hung by some cunning artificer in such a manner that it stretches out infinitely in all directions, in accordance with the extravagant tastes of deities. The artificer has hung a single glittering jewel in each eye of the net, and since the net itself is infinite in dimension, the jewels are infinite in number. There hang the jewels, glittering like stars in the first magnitude, a wonderful sight to behold. If we now arbitrarily select one of these jewels for inspection and look closely at it, we will discover that in its polished surface there are reflected all other jewels in the net, infinite in number. Not only that, but each of the jewels reflected in this one jewel is also reflecting all other jewels, so that there is an infinite reflecting process occurring. Reflecting, reflecting, reflecting. Mirroring one another. Maybe that is the beginning of sharing a soul connection. Most of my colleagues would giggle that I'm talking about soul connections. But I think it's important when we talk about connections to think about how we connect in deeper ways. The theme of this month is connections. And this week I have been thinking a lot about soul connections. But I'm guessing you have already in your life, in some way or another, experienced some sort of soul connection. They can sometimes be disconcerting or beguiling, and truly a special experience where one has an affinity for another, maybe not romantically per se, but we feel like we have known this person before, and not in passing, but deeply have known them. Sometimes these relationships are incredibly positive and fulfilling, while at other times the person rubs us raw like sandpaper on our souls. Some might call these types of connections soulmates, replete with a contract to work out our stuff together in this lifetime. The concept of soulmates has ancient roots and was discussed in Plato's Symposium. Plato explained that the gods believed that humans had become a little too powerful. So Zeus developed a creative solution by splitting humans in half as a punishment for humanity's pride, and also doubling the number of humans who would give tribute to the gods. Convenient. These split humans were in utter misery, to the point where they would not eat and would perish. So Apollo had sewn them up and reconstituted their bodies, with a navel being the only remnant harking back to their original combined form. It is said that when the two halves find each other, there is an unspoken understanding of one another, that they feel unified and would know no greater joy. I feel this type of positive connection with some of my closest friends. I personally do not think that we have only one soulmate, and that the connection has to be romantic. To share time with those who are my nearest and dearest is such an incredible gift, which helps me feel anchored in this world and truly connected. And yet, at other times, I lose perspective. I can feel completely alone and totally disconnected. What happens? It makes me wonder if these feelings of being separate are real, or just a manifestation of the mind. Albert Einstein once shared that a human being is part of a whole, called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. One experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings, as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is kind of a prison for us, restricting us to our present desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task, so says Einstein, must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. Einstein did not acknowledge this whole as a soul, per se, something that existed outside of us, but premised that everyone who is seriously involved in the pursuit of science becomes convinced that a spirit is manifest in the laws of the universe, a spirit vastly superior to that of man, and one in the face of which we will, with our modest powers, must feel humbled. The piece of truth that I take into my own soul from Einstein's thoughts is that we must free ourselves from this prison of our mind by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. I personally have to agree with Einstein, besides the fact that he was a scientific, brilliant person. I also believe that there is spirit or chi or energy that connects us all. My theological understanding has evolved and been evolving throughout my life in teachings found in the eyes of another being or in Vedic sutras or the teachings of 1,000 bodhisattvas awake to the journey that we're on. One such enlightened sage whose writings taught me about soul was Ralph Waldo Emerson. Emerson's mind-bending essay, which he first published anonymously, which I didn't realize, Nature, marked the beginning of a movement that came to be called transcendentalism, a movement that would ultimately change our world. Emerson, once a Unitarian minister, walked away from his congregation and Unitarianism because he felt that we, our forebears, were held back by our traditions. In thinking beyond the theology of the day, he wrote about his impressions of the soul. That great nature in which we rest, as the earth lies in the soft arms of the atmosphere, is that unity, that oversoul, within which every man's particular being is contained and made with all other. We live in succession, in division, in parts, in particles. Meantime, within man is the soul of the whole, the wise silence, the universal beauty, to which every part and particle is equally related, the eternal one. And this deeper power in which we exist and whose beatitudes is all accessible to us is not only self-sufficing and perfect in every hour, but the act of seeing and the thing seen, the seer and the spectacular, the subject and the object are one. We see the world piece by piece as the sun, the moon, the animal, the tree, but the whole of which these things are shining parts is the soul. We are one. If we would only be daring enough, courageous enough to acknowledge and give ourselves up to the experience, we are all soulmates, connected and vibrating together like a great hive at work, creating together. Are we able to see ourselves mirrored in another's eyes? What happens if we really look? I remember many years ago, that my goddaughter Emily was baptized. She was a year old. She's now 20. And I was not a scholar or a minister yet. There was not even a glimmer of ministerial presence about me. I was traveling the world, high tech in hand. But that day, as we sat in the congregation, and I was nervous about being a godparent, the pastor of the church, the Unity Church, before the baptism, right before that part in the service, stopped the service and asked us to look into one another's eyes. I remember how vulnerable I felt. The person sitting next to me was not someone I knew. I was definitely tentative, for sure, and I felt incredibly exposed, like naked. And then I looked at this woman, and really looked into her eyes, and I saw exactly what she saw in mine, which we were both vulnerable. We were both anxious. I felt like a primate. I didn't want to look. But that experience has stuck with me all these years, how that two people who do not know each other well can look deeply into another's eyes and feel connected. Have you ever done this? Truly looked into another person's eyes? I'm not talking about your loved one. Talking about someone you really don't know all that well. So I'm going to dare you this morning. And I know it's anxiety provoking. How many people are feeling anxious right now? Do you see what I'm saying? It's anxiety provoking. And why is that? Why do we feel a sense of anxiety when we do this? What is it? What are we afraid of? That they're going to know our deepest, darkest secrets? So I would invite you to just turn to someone, not someone that you're in a relationship with, but someone who you're not in a relationship with. And I would turn to that person, and you can move, it's okay. I would turn to that person and just look into each other's eyes. And I know it's scary, but just do it for me, just this once. I won't ever make you do it again, I promise. But just do it this once. And what I want you to do is just be present with that person. Just be present with that person. Put aside the fear. Put aside the anxiety. And just look at that person. And when you feel that moment of connection, that moment that you realize that you are connected, I want you to just say these words. I see you. Now, what I see happening around the sanctuary is that I see people hugging each other. How many people feel shy and vulnerable right now? Shy and vulnerable. That's why you come here. This feeling that you're feeling right now is why you come here. You are not alone. But we do this to ourselves, our minds. We allow our minds to separate us. And we don't have to. And I know it's hard. And as I said 2 weeks ago, as that friend once said to me, this is exhausting. And I know it is. But unless we get to this place, what are we doing? What are we doing? I want to just ask a question. What did you feel? Is anybody willing to just put it out there? What did you feel in that moment that you felt that sense of connection? Julia. So she felt very connected to Bunny. Anybody else? Sure. Warmth and joy. Ditto. Dave. Calm. Once you got through that primate part of your brain, right? Kindness. Thank you. Rob. Absolute love and trust. Relief. Openness and expansiveness. So, did anybody see anything mirrored back to you? What did you see? A new connection. Softening. Yeah. Yeah. Trust. Trust. So if we feel these... Love. So if we feel all of these things, all of these positive things, why don't we do it? Why don't we allow ourselves to be vulnerable in this way with another? And I know it's exhausting. So don't use that as an excuse. Although it is a good one. So I'm glad that you participated in this, and I want to thank you from my heart of hearts that you did. Because it truly is meaningful for me to watch your faces and watch you open. Because in that moment, you became part of someone else's life. And in that moment, you became awake. You became present. You became enlightened. And that is how easy it is. In closing, I'd like to share something that I wrote not all that long ago about such a deep, abiding soul connection. Let me just explain that most people do not realize that I write poetry. And this is a poem that is not necessarily romantic, but it is truly vulnerable. And for me to share it with you is an act of care and loving kindness that I share this part of myself with you. So here we go. It has no title. It's actually called One. I woke up in your eyes, dreaming. I wandered step from step. Those who wander are not lost, I would say. The words of my hunger echoed in the silence. Each step brought me closer to you, and then away. I unknowingly returned over and over, and yet I knew, felt the clink into place, like a well-worn locket from another place and time. I yearned for you and never knew until this moment, awake in your eyes. I stand as if naked, holding out myself to you, waiting for that familiar wrap and curl. It is you. It has always been you. I live into this moment, true and present, and breathing you into me, my first real breath. One might find this piece romantic, but it was not intended as such. It was just a deep act of sharing myself with another. What do we find when we look deeper? Here is a secret for each one of us. I've been telling a lot of secrets this month. We can only go to these enlightened places with and through one another. In connection with one another, we are the Sangha, the learned, beloved community. And each day through our outreach and our connection, we will add one more brave soul to our collective journey. For those who have not yet arrived, let us open our hearts and our minds and bid them welcome. Blessed be. Amen.